Service Radio.
You're listening to the DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Maggie Gilmore, librarian at the DC Public Library. On today's All Things Local, I'm joined by three DC Public Library staff from our special collections, and that is actually two staff, Paul Kelly and Ray Barker. We are also joined by two representatives from currently operating arts venues in DC, Rhizome's key contributor Lane Garrett and DC Arts Center director B. Stanley. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
For the month of October, Rhizome is partnering with DC Public Library to present Retro Perspective, an exhibit and performance series designed to provoke thought and encourage discussion regarding the history and value of independently run multidisciplinary art spaces in DC. Threaded through this narrative is the notion of risk. Each of the featured organizations and associations took a chance in a city where finding space for artistic ventures grows increasingly more difficult, as we all know. In addition to open gallery hours on weekends, there will also be live performances in tribute to both defunct and living venues, such as the Museum of Temporary Art, also known as MoTA, DC Space, Hole in the Sky, DC Arts Center. Rhizome DC is located at 6950 Maple Street Northwest, and events are posted at rhizomedc.org. So, Ray, tell us about how this project got started. Where did this idea come from, and how has it been working with Rhizome?
It's been great working with Rhizome. Steve Korn's been awesome, and Lane, you've been great and patient in answering those emails on a Sunday morning at 8 a.m. So the idea was born out of Steve Korn's head. I found out recently, around the time Rhizome opened. And so I think Steve's very aware of sort of the history of these spaces in DC and the vulnerability of these spaces, but, you know, also as the operator, chief operator or director or whatever of that space, being aware of its history. So I think that he wanted to commemorate those places and share their history. But then, so my side of it was that I started at the library, and I'd been a year plus ago, and I'd heard about Rhizome and knew that they did pretty fascinating, interesting, challenging, and surprising program events across the spectrum of music and other things. And so really it was a way for me to reach out to them to find out what they were up to. And so just sort of answering my curiosity and addressing my curiosity in these things. And then you and I went out there to meet Steve in January of this year.
And Ray, you've been gathering collections and oral histories from other venue operators since you came to the library. Did that contribute to kind of putting this whole idea together?
Yeah, that's a great question, because Blair Murphy put together a zine. I did that program a while ago about these spaces at Goethe Institute. And so through that zine, that was a survey basically of these various places in DC, came this sort of body of people and places and a history I felt like that could be expanded upon and documented more. You know, like there was literally a list of places with people whose names were there, and I could stalk them and track them down, and I did do that. The MoTA, Richard Squires, I talked to him and some people related to MoTA in 1978, a little bit later, and everything. So you could just kind of see that as a potential for documenting that while we still can. And so, yeah, I did a lot of oral histories with a lot of people. There's like 30 hours of that stuff. Portions of it will be in the exhibit. So that's one of the other themes of the exhibit. I guess I can say that now is documentation and preservation. And like, you know, if you don't have any materials, and B maybe can talk about this too. You know, I've been meeting with the venue owners and Bill Worrell from DC Space and like walking through their stuff and just seeing what they have. And so it's not only like for the point of our exhibit, but just in general, like you know, if there is no material left from those days, then like they almost don't exist, you know. And like Union Arts has this dramatic story, their dramatic story is all sort of online and you can track it online, and that's another resource. But you know, it's nice to sort of figure out, or at least make, you know, share the point of preserving and the value of that.
And through gathering some of these collections that individuals are loaning us for the exhibit at Rhizome, do you have any particular favorite pieces that people can expect to see?
I don't think I do. Yeah, we're trying to get a chair that from DC Space. Apparently, I haven't had it. How do you get that verified? I mean, is there a chair expert at B? Do you know? I don't know. But I've been told it is the chair from one of the managers at DC Space from up in the loft or whatever. So it's like, we'll see if that happens. We'll see if that happens. But the idea there is someone would sit in that chair, and we have live excerpts from an unnamed donor from... you know, from a Sun Ra performance and from a Dave Holland, David Murray, I think, performance recorded at DC Space. And so the idea is there someone could sit in the chair, listen to the performance and look at the poster and kind of get a sense. And then that sort of that content is attached to a Fugazi show too. So basically you're supposed to get the full realm of experiences that were at a part of DC Space.
And Ray, you and I and a colleague of ours, Julie, we went through the DC Public Library archives to learn a little bit more about the Rhizome House itself. We learned that it was built in 1922. It was occupied by a variety of folks and DC residents through the decades. The National Wildlife Fund at one point was in there, and it was actually a hair salon for... over 15 years. This is part of the process of doing a house history, which everyone can do at the DC Public Library. And you can just visit dclibrary.org/research/collections to learn how to do that for your own space. So speaking of the Rhizome House history, Lane, why don't you tell us about when it became Rhizome? When did you decide to put the sign on the building? And what's the process been like operating that space in Tacoma, D.C.?
Sure. So I'm one of the founding board members from Rhizome, and we got together sometime in early 2015, maybe even 2014, to start talking about ideas for non-commercial space in the Tacoma Silver Spring area. For the initial vision for a sort of all-purpose arts, education, anything goes kind of space. And the board sort of on again, off again, threw around ideas for a little while, and we eventually found the house on Maple Street in Tacoma, D.C. The latter part of 2015, and secured a lease there. Starting in October of 2015, we started running a few programs at other venues in the area. We ran a few events at Pyramid Atlantic, at their old location in Silver Spring, and a few other venues. And then we opened our doors at our current space right at the beginning of 2016. And so it's been a little over 2.5 years. We're going strong. We have programs most nights of the week. Some days we have more than one thing going on. We have a wide range of stuff. We've got youth programs for homeschoolers during the day, some after-school programming on and off. We've got concerts. I guess music is maybe our most prevalent focus. We've got concerts more nights of the week than not. Films, lectures, discussions, There's gallery space upstairs where this the collaboration with the library will be displayed. And
you guys also do some great workshops. A lot of electronic music based workshops recently I've seen. How did that come about?
Yeah, I guess one of the primary missions of the space is an educational component. So we're really interested in bringing people in who want to kind of interface with a community in different ways. Performance is certainly one way, but workshops are another. We've had several synthesizer makers who have given workshops to build synths that they've designed, or like guitar pedals that they've designed.
And I hear that you are reconstructing the synth that might be going into the bathroom during October.
Yes, there. If you go to Rhizome right now, you will find in the bathroom an operational room-sized synthesizer. So I imagine the lines at the outside the bathroom might get a little long with people playing with the synth in there. But it has sort of giant keys on the wall that you can lean on. You kind of have to go and experience it for yourself.
So as far as operating the space, how do you continue it from day to day, and what is the structure of just simply keeping that house as an arts venue?
So Rhizome has a board, as I mentioned, and it is run by a collective, mostly all volunteer collective. Of people who, so the number of people who organize events there is significant, probably 20 plus people involved in organizing and curating events. So it's very much a collective enterprise. And then we have, a collective of people who are willing to run events in the evenings and do the yard work and everything else that has to be done. In terms of it is a rental, so we do have to pay the rent every month. And the way that we do that is program revenue provides some of our income, but definitely not enough to cover the bills. We got a grant from the city of Tacoma Park to open up, which was very helpful for us kind of getting off the ground. We've gotten a few other grants from small, maybe one more from Tacoma Park for a specific program, a couple grants from the Tacoma Foundation, a couple of other small grants. And then individual donations. We ran a fundraiser a year and a half ago. We're going to be running another fundraiser this winter. And we're also in the process of applying now for some bigger grants, which, you know, it's definitely tricky figuring out how to make ends meet in DC. Space is expensive. There's definitely, I guess I am currently tasked with doing sort of heading up the fundraising efforts, and I definitely feel a tension between the sort of kind of DIY ethos and the need to seek out donations from corporate or government entities, but it's sort of like there's little other avenues forward.
Sure. It sounds like it's hard work, and you know, I've heard others make that statement that when you work in the arts, it's going to be hard work. It's inevitable. And B. Stanley, does this sound familiar to you? Operating a venue that's just around the corner from our current location on 18th Street at DC Arts Center?
Oh, yeah. You want to talk about hard work? Yeah, let's get down to some hard work. Yeah, and this is a perfect instance where we talk about how do you get across what you call the DIY or the artistic creative mentality of the people you want to serve and the reality of nailing down those dollars. DC Arts Center next year will be 30 years old, and I can tell you in that time we've seen a lot of ups and downs in that, because you really can't go to the people you serve. And that's kind of one of the big issues. You know, your programming revenue is going to turn out to be a lot of funding, a lot of fundraising, and not really taking it from those folks. The people we rent our theater to always want it cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And I understand, I'm a theater guy, you know, so I want it cheap too. But on the other hand, they also want the bathrooms to be nice and clean, and they would like to have the heat working and the air conditioning and the person at the front desk to take credit cards, and all of that stuff costs dough. And so it's sort of this dichotomy that you live in. But this is what you bought into, you know. So there's, you go into this sort of eyes wide open, at least I think in the 21st century you do. When DCAC was founded in the 20th century, we had a lot of what you call the kitchen table nonprofits, where, you know, three or four people get together and decide they were going to be a nonprofit. They were all on the board, and three people's signature on an IRS form meant, hey, man, you were a nonprofit, and fill out your forms, and now you can go to the city for some money. And things changed a great deal, especially in the 90s and the 2000s, and there's no such thing as a tabletop nonprofit anymore. You've really got to be dotting all your I's and crossing your T's, and you've got to delve into that world of fundraising. But having said that, it's easier to do when you've got a lot of programming. It's easier to do when you're serving a lot of people. It's easier to do when you are a part of that community. And as long as you are ingraining yourself in the fabric of that community, and generations of people come through there and recognize the value of what you're up to, it's not as hard to get people to donate, because the people that were 16, 17, 18 years old 20 years ago are now people with their own families. And if they think about anything, I think they think that, gee, I don't want my kids growing up in a DC that doesn't have the kind of cool stuff that was there when I was around. And there's less and less of those kind of spaces where you can invite people to have a lot of opportunity. So they kind of feed into one another, you know? I'm always surprised when the people that I'm going to get grants from are like half my age. And they're like, oh, yeah, man, I read about you, you know, on the internet, you know, and oh, it was so cool in the 80s, wasn't it? I'm like, oh, you weren't there. How do you know? You know? But, yeah, I mean, and as we were talking about opportunity for so many different people, you know, that's similar to us. That is what DC Arts Center is, opportunity for every kind of thing, whether film screenings or music or performance or visual art. And I think there's an awful lot of people who would have been squelched in their creativity had places like DCAC not existed.
Right. And will you tell us a little bit about the amassment of collections that you've maintained over the last 30 years?
The amassment of collections that I have maintained.
A fair amount of ephemera related to DCAC, which of course we are interested in as archivists.
Yes.
What are you bringing to Rhizome this month, maybe specifically?
Well, I'm not bringing it. Ray's bringing it. I gave Ray, I will give him today, a video.
I thought you had that. I don't have anything.
Oh, yeah. Snap, as they say. Well, we have some programs. We have some reviews. We have stuff that kind of indicates people who have done well. There are some actors in particular that have gone on to California and are on television today making big money that don't give us any money, by the way. And there's also a lot of information about some of the gay and lesbian programming that was being done back in the late 80s, early 90s, which is part of this whole risk-taking thing you were mentioning before. And even today we continue with the LGBTQ and plus things that go on. And right now there's an exhibit just like that. So we sort of by chance have a lot of that stuff. We have all the postcards we've sent out. We have all the newsletters that we've sent out. So it's documented through just the stuff that we generated. And just and part of it, I would not have saved it if you don't need it for writing grants. Hint, word to the wise. Yeah. Make sure you keep all your stuff, because at the end of the year, you're going to need that to demonstrate what you've done and go back and look at it. Oh, yeah, we did have that midget trombone group in there. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and we definitely know how that feels working in the libraries. We constantly have to prove ourselves in order to receive funding year after year. And speaking of libraries, Paul, let's switch over to you and talk a little bit about the Punk Archive. It is October, which we all know what that means. It's Punk Rocktober, as we like to say. The Punk Archive is turning, well, let's see, it launched 4 years ago. So each October, we do like to highlight the project. This month, we are focusing on our zine collection. We've had volunteers processing our zine collection and sorting it over the past over a year. Paul, talk to us about digitizing zines.
Okay, so for those of you that don't know what a zine is, we define them as short for magazine or fanzine. So they're self-publications motivated by a desire for self-expression and not for profit. So the zines that we have in digdc.dclibrary.org do not encompass the entirety of the zine holdings. They're, you know, up there, there are 158 issues. They came from 14 donors, and they span the years of 1977, roughly through to 2008. The ones that were up there were digitized by a vendor in 2015. And we spent around a year and a half working with our amazing volunteers, describing those items and making them available to the public. And they're up there for everybody to view right now.
And are all of them available to view?
No.
A leading question.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the reasons for that, though, is, you know, like I said, we digitized these in 2015, and since then we've continued to receive more. And also at the time we didn't do everything for various reasons. You know, we are very cognizant of things like privacy, of, you know, a lot of these zines have like pretty personal stuff. Some of them have, yeah, it's all, it's really a case-by-case basis to decide what goes where. Anything that isn't digitized, you can absolutely come in to view them. They're all over at the Georgetown branch.
And if someone were to argue with one of the zines being digitized and were maybe offended or felt like it was outside of our scope to post that for the public, what would they be able to do about it?
They would just, so we do have a takedown policy. Usually takedown policies have to do with copyright, and that's a whole other question. And also something that we talk a lot about with these materials. But, you know, we would be less inclined to take something down because someone was offended, but we'd be more inclined to take something down if a zine creator stepped forward or a zine contributor stepped forward and said, you know, I worked on this when I was a kid. This doesn't represent who I am now, or maybe it does. Various reasons, you know. Once something's online, it's up there forever. I don't know if a zine that I contributed to in like 2001 would be a great thing for a potential employer to look at if I was applying for a job. So, I mean, there are various issues at play here. But we would just, you know, any reasonable request, we would adhere to that and honor the creator's wishes.
And this is something that libraries and archives, you know, continue to discuss and change policy as various new formats come into play. So it's very interesting. We'll see how our own policies develop through this is relatively new collection that we have.
Yeah, I'm pretty interested to see how people react to this stuff. Mm-hmm. We've sort of been sitting on it for a little while. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to get it out there and like see the reactions, both, you know, positive, negative, and everywhere in between.
Sure. And so you go to digdc.dclibrary.org. You can do kind of a basic search for zine right there on that page.
Yeah, you can. But like the better way to get to the stuff is to just kind of scroll down until you find the collection. I think it's called DC Punk Archive Zine Library. So you click on that and then you can browse by, by subject. You can also browse it by... one pretty exciting thing that we did was to make sure people could browse by venue or by artist that's mentioned in the... Not all of them mention, you know, artists and venues, but the ones that do, you can browse by that.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. And that is thanks to our great volunteers sort of pouring through page by page, looking for place names and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That will be really fun to sort through and take a look at while we're at Rhizome and talking about all these various venues we can kind of dig through during the exhibition. Speaking of which, this Friday is the opening of that exhibit at Rhizome DC. Ray, why don't you tell us about what we have in store for Friday night, October 5th?
Yeah. So we are doing sort of a reenactment or a reinterpretation of something that was done in 1978 at MOTA. And this was Steve Korn's idea. So through our research, we discovered that Walter Hopps, a sort of famous curator of sorts from the Corcoran, did this thing called 36 hours. And so the plan there was to keep the gallery open for at least 36 hours or up to 36 hours. And it was an all call for art from local artists, and they hung it in MOTA from floor to ceiling, wall to wall, all that. And we actually have a piece in the show which hung there at the time, which I think is pretty cool. Richard Squire's work that he made and they hung there. That will be in the show at Rhizome. But so we are reenacting that. It won't be 36 hours. It'll be 4 hours. It'll be 4 hours. It'll be a solid 4 hours. No, I don't know. Man, I'm being silly. It's until we fill the room, the bottom floor of Rhizome. And this is like a true call for art and artists to bring. I asked my daughter if she'd bring her artwork, and she said no. But if anyone out there,
it's cold, man. It's cold.
We really do want that to be a part of the thing. Like we were really excited by that, about, you know, Steve or Lane or myself or whomever with a hammer and a nail and hang an art, or however we're going to hang that. But also, we are playing excerpts from an interview, and I'm getting in the weeds here now, that Maggie and I discovered down at the Archives of American Art, who, you know, they are graciously letting us sort of use some of their material for our exhibition. And I thought of one other favorite piece in the show is a black and white shot of this guy all by himself inside DC space, done by this great photographer named Mary Swift. So they have her papers or photographs down there at Archives of American Art. So we pulled from that collection, and that will be in our show. But one of the other things from MOTA files was an artist interview that the second founder of MOTA, Janet Schmuckel, did in Art Basel in Italy, I think, in 1978 at a bar called the Crescent Hotel. I hope everybody's writing this down. And so I hope that they're drunk and that things get loopy, because I think that it's going to be interesting. But we're playing all 30 minutes of that interview that she did. And so that's sort of the opening act to Rogelio Maxwell's performance on a semi-obscure keyboard. I don't know, Lane, if you know the name of this. It's about 60 pounds, but Lane is going to go over to Rogelio's house Friday afternoon and pick it up and load in.
Because I'm so big and strong.
Lane's huge, yeah. But we're going to do that. And Rogelio knew Janet quite well. And Rogelio's in like all these pictures and exhibitions and stuff from DC Space. And like he got around, and he ran hard art in, it wasn't Adams Morgan, but it was near here. Do you know?
I don't remember where it was now, to tell you the truth.
But anyway, did I answer the question? I feel like I got off track. But so that's Rogelio's performance, and that'll be around 8. So that's just sort of an ode to Janet and her work and to Moda, sort of reenact the Moda sensibility.
So Friday, October 5th at Rhizome, you're going to start at 7 p.m. and we'll be there through the evening accepting artwork from anyone and everyone. And the duration of October, we have other events planned every Friday night. There will be a show that's part of the Retro Perspective program. Later in the month, we also are going to host a panel discussion that we really hope to frame around the topic of risk. We got into it a little bit earlier in this conversation. Ray, who's planning to be there that night?
Yeah, that's exciting. And the sort of temporary name of that panel, it's October 30th at 7 to 9. And B. Stanley will be there. I hope Ames Armstrong, both from DCAC, of course, will be there. And we're calling it prospective. And so it's sort of looking forward. So one of the things about these programs, I feel sometimes, at least the ones I do, tend to be a nostalgia fest. And, you know, that's the notion of archives is recalling the past and thinking about it. But to me, it should be a more like vital conversation. And I want people to talk. I want everyone to talk. And where was I going with that? So Julianne Brienza will be there. And we're excited to have her there. And she's from Capital Fringe. And her story is amazing. I don't know. I mean, they are expanding there. They're doing amazing things there. So I'm really excited to hear her story and their future plans. And she has a blog that's amazing. So if you can follow that, she gives weekly updates on their progress of that space. And there will also be, Maggie will be there sort of talking about the library as a space where people can do things in DC. And Steve Korn from Rhizome will also be there. And I guess I'm running things. I don't know, but I'm really excited about that event.
Yeah, that should be a good conversation. That is Tuesday, October 30th, also at 7 p.m. And we also will host open gallery hours every weekend at Rhizome from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. The exhibit will also be on view when Rhizome is open for their regularly programmed schedule, which is like basically every night of the week.
Pretty much. I was just putting together the coverage schedule for this month, and there might be one night off, but it's pretty much every night this month.
And speaking of zines again, we have made a zine for this month, which maybe we will digitize our own zine and add our own zine into our collection.
If you're lucky.
Does this happen often, Paul? Are we are contributors to our own archive, aren't we?
I guess we are.
The zine, it's really, really nice. It's designed by Michelle Casto, and take a look. It's basically a calendar on paper. So in lieu of a social media event post, we may bring a paper calendar around. So keep your eye out for the Rhizome zine. It has a beautiful cover image of the house itself. And Ray, do we have anything else that we need to talk about Retro Perspective?
Naoko's contribution. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Because you know more about that than I do, but I'm also excited to have that be a part of it.
Yes. As you may remember, I mentioned Rhizome was a hair salon for at least 10 years. And we have a colleague and friend artist in DC. Her name's Naoko Wausugi. She will be coming to Rhizome, hopefully October 26th, to do a live piece of hers. She is a performance artist in many ways, and she has a piece called Amber Wolf's Hair Salon. So she will be giving a live haircut at Rhizome, during which there will be a conversation. They will both be mic'd, the stylist and the participant receiving the haircut. So the conversation is also part of the performance. So we hope to see that on our calendar for later in the month. So, again, today we have had Director of DC Art Center B. Stanley here with us. Thank you for coming out this afternoon.
It's my pleasure.
Do you have any exciting events coming up? What is at DC Art Center right now?
Right now is the play by Ian Allen called How to Win a Race War. It is a futuristic spoof on white supremacy literature and has been is highly controversial. It is 9 white men playing all African-American people. The Washington Post reviewed it last week. It was in the city paper last week. It's all over social media, so check it out. It's not for the faint of heart.
Talk about taking risks. And we've had Lane Garrett of Rhizome DC here with us. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
We will see you soon to install this exhibit that we've been talking about. And Paul Kelly, digital archivist with DC Public Library.
Thanks for having me.
And Ray Barker, archivist.
Thank you.
Oral historian at DC Public Library.
Thanks.
So this has been an episode of DC Public Library's All Things Local on Full Service Radio, broadcasted live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. For more information on Retro Perspective, visit rhizomedc.org. And for all things D.C. Public Library, follow D.C. Public Library on Instagram and on Twitter at DCPL. Download this show wherever you get your podcasts by searching for Full Service Radio, DCPL Radio. We'll see you at the exhibit opening this Friday, October 5th, right? Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at @FullServiceRDO. On Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.